Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the pantograph of Friday, June 20th, 2025. We turn first to page one, where the main story is headlined, Buckle Up for Summer Heat, Heat Dome to Bring High Temps and Humidity to Central Illinois. This story is datelined Bloomington. Summer will make a dramatic entrance in the U.S. this week with a heat dome that will bring stifling temperatures and uncomfortable humidity to millions. The heat will be particularly worrisome this weekend across wide stretches of Nebraska, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Iowa, where forecasters are warning of extreme temperature impacts. In McLean County, temperatures could reach levels calling for heat advisory warnings from Saturday to Monday, according to the National Weather Service. This will be the first stretch of true summertime weather for many from Midwest to the East Coast, said Tom Kynes, a meteorologist at the private weather company AccuWeather. A lot of those folks have been saying, where's summer? Well, buckle up because it's coming, said Kynes. The humid conditions will make places that exceed 90 degrees Fahrenheit feel as much as 20 degrees hotter, he said. A heat dome forms when a large area of high pressure in the upper atmosphere acts as a reservoir that traps heat and humidity, said Ricky Castro, a National Weather Service meteorologist in Illinois. According to the National Weather Service Weather Prediction Center, daytime temperatures will be in the 90s and overnight temperatures will only drop to the mid-70s from the Great Lakes to the East Coast during the heat wave that is expected to last into next week. Moisture blown northward from the Gulf of Mexico is fueling the muggy weather, said Jacob Asherman, a Weather Prediction Center meteorologist. This influx of Gulf moisture is fairly typical during late spring and summer, he said, and the heat will be widespread into next week. Andrew Taylor, a meteorologist at the National Weather Service office in Lincoln, said Friday's high temperatures in central Illinois will be in the mid-80s with a heat index in the upper 80s. But from Saturday heading into Monday, temperatures could be in the low to mid-90s with a heat index in the range of 100 to 105. Temperatures will peak Monday, but will gradually come down to the lower 90s by Wednesday and possibly the upper 80s by Thursday, he added. A heat advisory goes into effect when temperatures are in the 105 to 110 range. Under these conditions, the National Weather Service suggests postponing or rescheduling outdoor activities and staying in a cool place. We're getting close to that threshold, Taylor said. A potential heat advisory is certainly not out of the question for this weekend, but a decision has not been made. Taylor recommends anyone required to work outside to take frequent breaks, drink a lot of water, and limit their time outside in the middle of the day. Residents should also take extra care to make sure their pets don't become overheated. Nicole Watts, executive director of the Humane Society of Central Illinois, advised dog owners not to overexert their pets by taking them on long walks when temperatures are high. They should avoid also walking on blacktop or pavement, which can burn a dog's paw pads. Watts said if a surface is too hot to leave your hand on for 10 seconds, the dog should not be walking on it. Watts also advised pet owners to be mindful of hydration. If they're worried their pet might be overheated to dehydrated, they should take it to a veterinarian immediately. A dog would be panting excessively and might seem nervous or restless, she said. She added that a dog's tongue or gums might also turn bright red if the animal is overheated. Humidity is the amount of water vapor in the air, and the heat index is what the temperature feels like when the humidity outside is factored in, according to the Weather Service. When humans sweat, it cools the body down because it absorbs and removes heat as it evaporates off the skin. The air is saturated with water on humid days, which makes it harder for sweat to evaporate. Hot and humid days can be dangerous when the body is unable to cool itself off and can exacerbate pre-existing health conditions and even lead to heat stroke. Minimizing direct sun exposure, wearing loose and light-colored clothing, staying hydrated, and spending time in air-conditioned spaces are ways to cool down during extreme heat, according to the National Weather Service. Some parts of the U.S., such as Phoenix, Arizona, are famously hot without the mugginess. Phoenix and nearby desert regions experience this so-called dry heat due to being located far away from large water bodies, mountains that block moist air masses, and weather patterns that bring scarce precipitation. Sweat evaporates faster in dry climates compared to humid ones. This can be dangerous because it is easy to underestimate how dehydrated you are, according to Johns Hopkins University and Johns Hopkins Health System. These conditions will be widespread into next week. On Friday, Denver could reach 100 degrees, according to the Weather Service. Chicago temperatures could reach 96 degrees on Sunday. On Tuesday, Washington, D.C. could see a high of 99 degrees, and New York Central Park could reach 96 degrees. Several states in the Midwest could see dangerous temperature impacts over the weekend, according to a Weather Service measure that rates the risk from 0 to 4. Parts of Nebraska and Kansas will be in the highest category on the scale on Saturday, meaning that anyone without effective cooling or sufficient hydration could face health risks. On Sunday, Iowa, Wisconsin, Missouri, and Illinois also see a Category 4 rating. In places such as Iowa, crops can affect the humidity in summer months. Plants feel the effects of hot weather, and some people in the Midwest are familiar with corn sweat, which is when crops move water to their leaves and other surfaces so it can evaporate, according to The Ohio State University. Madison County, Iowa farmer Ryan Marquardt said corn sweat is not as bad as a sauna, but it definitely would have a sauna effect. It's humid in there in the cornfield, so you're going to sweat. Cornfield contributions to the overall humidity are much lower compared to the humidity compared to the humidity that winds carry from the Gulf of Mexico, according to Ohio State University. Our next front page story is about McLean County history makers. Leaders in faith, business, and politics shaped the community. This story is datelined Normal. Each member in the 2025 class of the McLean County Museum of History's History Makers Gala met the honor with their own brand of humility and grace. But Sally Rudolph, recognized for decades of local civic engagement, may have encapsulated it most succinctly in her remarks. "It's a big wow for me," she said, her voice catching in her throat. "I've been feeling this wow for almost since I found out I was to be honored in this way, and it's really exciting." Rudolph was honored alongside Rob Fazzini and Father Doug Hennessy during Wednesday night's event, which brought an audience of over 400 to the Brown Ballroom at Illinois State University's Bone Student Center. Fazzini, a former bank president and past president of the McLean County Chamber of Commerce, was recognized for his long history of helping business owners, entrepreneurs, and dreamers of McLean County finding their financial paths successfully. In fact, one attendee approached him afterward to say that a bank account Fazzini helped facilitate was still in use almost 50 years after it was established. To Fazzini, also a former Bloomington alderman, the motivation was simple. "It's like, really, we did all these things because they're the right thing," he said. "To be recognized for them is just gravy." Hennessy, a native of the Twin Cities, was honored for his lifelong pursuit of sowing peace, love, and joy amongst his neighbors. I hope and pray that whatever I've contributed to the history of McLean County adds to the measure of justice and peace and faith in the county, he said in his remarks. This year's gala introduced a new format with pre-recorded video presentations describing the honoree's achievements with personal photos and news clippings to illustrate. Originally from Chicago Heights, Fazzini found his way to Illinois State University, where he met and married his wife, Lynn, in 1962. After moving around for some time, the family settled back into McLean County in 1988. During his remarks, Fazzini shared three fun facts about McLean County, including that Rhode Island is a mere 29 square miles larger than the county, and that the Visa card in most attendees' wallets owes its name to the McLean County Bank of Bloomington, which first trademarked the name for its Vacation Incentive Savings Account, VISA. His third fact concerned Methodist pastor, Charles Merrill Smith, author of How to Become a Bishop Without Being Religious, who appeared on the Johnny Carson Show in 1965. But Fazzini said Smith's most important contribution came on June 17, 1962. He performed a marriage ceremony for a young lady, 19 years old, named Lynn Johnson, who married a 21-year-old Robert Fazzini at the church, he said, looking at his wife in the audience, and that became the beginning of a 63-year-long journey through life. He said he could not imagine taking that journey with another partner. Hennessy was introduced next in a video that detailed his education in the Catholic faith, beginning in Bloomington, and taking him to Rome during the pivotal Vatican II conference that radically changed how the church engaged with parishioners. After earning a master's degree in religious studies, Hennessy was assigned to his final parish at Holy Trinity, the church of his childhood, where he delivered Mass from the early 2000s until his retirement in 2013. As a young man, I thought Bloomington Normal was a great place to grow up, he said. Coming back as an old man, I found Bloomington Normal is not even bigger, but it's better as a place to live your life. Rudolph, the evening's final honoree, moved to McLean County in 1965 because of her husband Lee's position with the Illinois Farm Bureau. 4 years later, someone suggested that she join the League of Women Voters, a decision that ultimately led to a lifetime of public service. Rudolph served a decade on the McLean County Board, to which she was first elected in 1970 to represent its newly created District 10. She went on to spend 25 years on the McLean County Zoning Board of Appeals and play a pivotal part in the development of McLean County's landscape and infrastructure, including wind farm development and housing initiatives. In her speech accepting the honor, Rudolph reflected on the eight words that started it all: "You should join the League of Women Voters." And she left the audience with a similar charge. My challenge to all of you is, can you think of someone, maybe yourself, whom you could say a few words to, and maybe they might start? It could be a grandchild. It could be whomever else you think you might be able to influence in some way by saying, you should, or you could, and you could fill in the rest of that, she said, and just see what happens. Our next front page story is about education, headlined, Teachers Ask Unit 5, No Phones in Class. Board told students distracted and current policy not enough. This story is datelined Normal. Four McLean County Unit 5 teachers called for the school board to ban cell phones in classrooms, spurring a lengthy discussion when the school board met this week to approve the fiscal 2025 budget. During the public comment period of Wednesday's meeting, the board heard from four teachers who reported an increase in cell phone usage, especially in high school classrooms, and said students are distracted from their lessons, They expressed concern for the effect cell phones could have on students' academic growth and mental health. Discipline referrals for cell phones in classrooms have decreased because they don't carry consequences and have no effect, the teachers told the board. Superintendent Kristen Weichel and the school board took action on the issue earlier in this school year, revising the student handbook to include a policy that states electronic devices may never be used in any manner that disrupts the educational environment, violates student conduct rules, or violates the rights of others. The teachers who spoke at Wednesday's meeting asked for more oversight and suggested a ban would be more effective. Board members who continued the discussion after public comments spoke at length about how to address disruptive cell phone use, though no action was taken on the issue. Patrick Manieri, who was elected to the board in April, said he agreed there needs to be more expectations and accountability for students when it comes to cell phone use, and said teachers and adults also bear responsibility in showing students what is and is not allowed. Prompted by a question from Manieri, Weichel said, under current policy, the circumstances that allow for a student to use a cell phone in the classroom include students with a specific individualized education plan and certain medical conditions, and teachers may allow for cell phones to be used for a classroom project that involves some sort of content creation. When members of the district's cell phone committee met this year, they discussed students following those parameters and learning to be more responsible, Weichel noted. There was talk about wanting to make that we're teaching students to use those parameters because more than likely they will have a cell phone when they leave school, whether it be during the day or once they graduate from Unit 5, Weichel said. There's a lot of conversation as far as what those parameters should or should not be, and so after the second cell phone committee meeting, we did come back and suggest adding the language to the handbook. Manieri asked if the district should set firmer limits to support teachers, especially during instructional time, and to account for students' educational and social development. There is not a perfect answer to this, right? I think we all can agree with that, Manieri said. I think every person in this room can agree with that. Board member Kelly Pyle referenced the district's recent survey, which received 1,000 responses from families, students, and staff, and showed the current policy was not effective, particularly at the high school level. The results showed about 70% of students acknowledge cell phones distract them in the learning environment, and only 15.6% of staff believed in the current policy, believed that the current policy should remain in place, Pyle said. In contrast, 70% of staff supported greater restrictions to the cell phone policy, and of that group, roughly 40% advocated that student cell phones be silenced and put away during all school hours. This shows a lack of consistency and enforceability under the current system. We have to do better, Pyle said. Students will exploit these inconsistencies, making it harder then for teachers to reinforce those policies. So having a district-wide policy requiring phones to be turned off and put away during the day would simplify expectations and promote consistency across all grade levels, which is the expectation at our elementary and junior highs. Board President Alex Williams said despite their policies and discipline, the root cause of the issue starts at home, where students could learn how to use their phones appropriately. I don't have the answers, and I appreciate the public commenters tonight, but we need to ask ourselves very candidly, what are we doing to solve the root cause, and are we willing to take a critical look at student discipline once we make our decision, Williams said. Board member Amy Roser said if the board wants a more restrictive policy, it needs to take action, not ask the administration to do additional work and more assessments or evaluations. That is taking time away from other things that we could solve. So if we have our minds made up, then we need to stand behind that and take that vote, Roser said. And our last front page story is about the community, headlined, BJHS student, Bloomington's first ever Miss Juneteenth. This story is datelined Bloomington. After decades of community celebrations for the holiday, Bloomington will crown its first Miss Juneteenth at this year's festival in Miller Park. The newly created contest aims to highlight young Black girls who serve in their community as role models, said Amber Collins of Recreate LLC, one of the organizers of the event. On Saturday, 12-year-old Maya Rushing will be crowned as the inaugural honoree, complete with the sash and tiara, which she will wear in front of a crowd of hundreds. I feel shocked and good at the same time because it just happened to be me that got picked, said Maya, a Bloomington native who was entering 7th grade at Bloomington Junior High School. Maya told the Pantograph that she loves to play basketball and hopes to do so professionally one day. It was really her natural instinct for helping others. That's what stood out to all of us, Collins said of the reason Maya was chosen for the title. She has this desire to serve other people and help her community. She has a beautiful mindset with what she thinks is possible and going beyond that. The contest was open to Bloomington District 87 students between 6th grade and 18 years of age. Organizers plan to open the contest to Unit 5 next year. Collins, who works for Bloomington Junior High School as a restorative school specialist through Project Oz, said she has known of other communities that honor a Miss Juneteenth and wanted to introduce the tradition to Bloomington Normal. This is one opportunity to rally and come together, said Collins, who was involved with organizing the festival for the first time after attending for a number of years. There were 5 applicants for Miss Juneteenth this year. Applications were distributed by staff members at the junior high and Bloomington High School and also made available to the students online. When choosing an honoree, Collins said it was important to look at the holistic person, including academics, community involvement, and someone who understands a community is nothing without their people. The entire process took about a month or two, Collins said, between creating the application, getting it out within the schools, reviewing applicants, and choosing an honoree. Maya said a school staff member had given her an application and asked her if she would fill it out. So I just said, why not, she said. Within her application, Maya said she talked about successful people that helped build confidence in other girls. The Miss Juneteenth honoree will be introduced on the main stage at 2:15 p.m. Saturday at Miller Park at 1020 South Morris Avenue in Bloomington. I think this is something that will be really good for Bloomington in general and for girls to be seen and appreciated for the things they are doing, Collins said. I am hoping this is a program and gets sponsors in the coming year. And if you go, Saturday's Juneteenth celebration begins at 11:30 a.m. and runs until 5:15 p.m. at Miller Park in Bloomington. The celebration will feature vendors, food trucks, music, and different performances throughout the day with Miss Juneteenth at 2:15 p.m. on the main stage. And here is today's Flick Fact question. On the lawn of the old Christian County Courthouse in Taylorville is a statue of Abraham Lincoln and a pig that is holding a court brief. Why? And the answer is, the statue commemorates the story of a court case held at the old courthouse. Back in the 1850s, pigs living under the courthouse and trying to stay cool in summer were making so much noise that Lincoln could not make his arguments to the jury. Humorously, Lincoln requested a writ of quietus from Circuit Judge David Davis of Bloomington fame. Thanks to Ruthie Cobb of Bloomington for the question. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, June 20th, 2025. I look forward to reading part two with you next.